everybody. Or hey, everybody, if you fit puberty.
One more time, but lower.
Hey, everybody. Hey there, everybody. How you doing?
This is a weird Johnny Bravo vibe. Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I don't know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we're watching, this is series 5, episode 1, and I think this might be my most watched episode of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's the best episode, but this is like comfort food Doctor Who to me. Like, there's not, like, the stakes in it aren't super high, but the episode's really good. I think this is the best introduction one could get to this, to the series.
Doctor comfort food. Thank you. I've been thinking about that for a little too long.
It's called the 11th hour.
Uh-huh.
It is the introduction of Matt Smith's 11th Doctor. Uh-huh. And I don't know if you remember this, or how much of it you remember, rather, but once long ago, like pre-COVID long ago, like before we even lived together long ago, I showed you one episode of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
This was that episode.
I do remember that, because you were really trying to get me to watch it and to like it. And you said, come on, just this one. Just this one, it's a recent-ish doctor, and I was like, I don't know. I just specifically remember the TARDIS ending up in, like, a backyard of a house. There's lots of ivy.
Yes, so this is, as you remember, at the end of time, the 10th Doctor regenerated into the 11th Doctor, but the regeneration caused the TARDIS to explode a little.
Yes.
Because the Doctor, for some reason, hasn't learned yet not to regenerate inside the TARDIS.
Where else is he gonna go? That's his home, dude.
Just step outside.
Or go deeper in the TARDIS. There's so many rooms. Regenerate in the closet.
Stop regenerating right next to the engine.
Yeah, that's my thing.
Swimming pool.
Yeah, to our understanding, it's bigger on the inside, yet we've only ever really seen the closet.
Yeah, they haven't really done a whole lot with exploring the TARDIS. Really, even in the original series, they didn't do a lot. Most of the places you go are just like empty rooms that look kind of like the TARDIS's main room.
So regenerate in one of those, fool.
You goof. This is Matt Smith's first episode. Also, taking over as showrunner is Stephen Moffat, who was the creator of The Weeping Angels, also the creator.
See, now, if you wanted to get me hooked, that's the episode you should have shown me first.
Yeah, I should have. I wanted a place that I feel like is a good entry point, and the 11th hour, I feel like, is the strongest entry point, because you don't really need to know a whole lot going into it. You've described the Doctor as sort of a Peter Pan type figure before.
Yeah, that is a hill I will die on.
This episode, I feel, is one of the strongest cases for that. But
because he abducts a small fairy.
This also
and banishes her from the treehouse.
When Stephen Moffat took over as showrunner, he had originally wanted an older doctor. He had wanted someone who would be more like in their 40s or 50s, because they had, you know, you'd had two relatively young actors playing him, and this character had historically been in like his late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he picked Matt Smith, who is actually the youngest actor to ever play the Doctor, beating out the previous holder, Peter Davison. Would you like to guess how old Matt Smith was when he took this role?
26.
He was indeed 26. He was younger than either of us are right now.
Well, because we had talked about that before.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I'm not going to try to be like, I'm so smart. Because I was having an existential crisis afterwards, because I went, I am almost 30 and I have done nothing. Except for this podcast.
Except for this podcast. And so,
which will be my legacy, it seems, since nobody wants to hire a theater artist.
And so Matt Smith took over this role, I think, because, as you will find, he has an old soul about him as he plays this character. Like, there's definitely a youthful exuberance he brings to it, but there's also a part of him that it just feels like, oh, you're 1,000 years old. OK, I buy that.
Like a maturity.
Yeah, you'll see there's a weight to him that
because like there is a if we want to go down this side route, because there is the people or like there are the people that in their lives have had a lot of like trauma and stuff. So they mature.
Yeah.
A lot faster than everybody else because they have to. And then the people that are or then children that you're like, oh, they're an old soul. And that's because this isn't.
That's because they have to be an adult when they get.
Well,
home.
That or if you want to look at the more like, hi, we're going to venture into non-Zach friendly territory, a little more woo woo for you. Dr. Woo Woo. any child that you're like, oh, yeah, they're just they've got an old soul. Yeah, that's because this isn't their first time here. If you believe in reincarnation, like I do.
Oh, okay.
You are a person that is built by thousands of years of, you know, people making new people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you just want to talk about it, like historically, there's that idea of you're beset upon by the last 7 generations.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there is some like psychology there to it where like the trauma of your ancestors gets handed down for generations until it finally works itself out.
Because there's also the thing, too, where it's like people now that have ADHD, it's like it's not a crutch, but it's not as useful as it would have been when you had to stay awake and keep your ears peeled for wild animals wanting to eat you. But in this case, for the doctor.
Yeah, he literally regenerates.
Yeah, I do like the idea, though, of if we're looking at that logic and we're looking at like this is somebody who is comprised of generations of people before him. This is his 11th like iteration.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he is built upon. Or he is made of 11 different iterations or 10 other iterations of himself.
Yeah. Getting back to the episode itself here, or rather to Matt Smith, I think he's probably the second most famous doctor of the modern era.
He's definitely the only other one that I knew of coming into this.
Partly because I think he was at the end of the Tumblr girl era. Which isn't to disparage Tumblr girls, but it's more just to disparage the end of Tumblr. You know, he was the last one to get shared like wildfire. And as such has a lot of, I think, his own tropes that you've probably heard of. What are some things that you know about Matt Smith's incarnation?
So I think this was like all of my friends' favorite doctors.
Okay.
Because there was one kid, I won't name names, but he has one of the coolest names like I've ever heard. He was one of the coolest kids I'd ever known. I had such a crush on him when I was growing up. He wanted nothing to do with me. But something that he did as like an everyday look in high school, particularly, is he would wear a bow tie.
Okay.
And later on in life had been like, oh, yeah, I was only doing that because like I was really into Doctor Who. And I understand that it's Matt Smith's doctor that is the bow tie.
Yes, Matt Smith is the bow tie.
And the fez, yeah.
He does occasionally wear a fez. I'll talk a little bit about the fez when we get to the part where he starts wearing it, because there is kind of a funny story attached to it. But I'll get to that then.
But yeah, it was the bow tie that I know specifically. And one of our very good friends, this is his doctor.
Yeah, he's also my doctor. He is my favorite by a pretty long stretch. Not to disparage any other doctors, I think the doctors are all fine actors. This is the kind of doctor that like really gets me into the show.
Mm-hmm.
And there are always aspects of this in other doctors too, but I think 11 and 2 are really the two doctors that portray this sort of like for not wanting to over describe it, sort of like a male Miss Frizzle energy.
Okay.
You'll see more of it when we get into the show. I don't want to again.
I don't want to say airhead, but
just like a nut, like the absent minded professor is a thing that I hear that concept getting thrown around a lot, where he's not stupid. If anything, he might just kind of play a little flighty, but there's a part of it there's a sort of a fun manic energy to them,
like a manic pixie.
And Matt Smith is on record.
Manic pixie time lord.
Matt Smith is on record saying that Patrick Troughton, the second Doctor, is the one that was the most inspiration for his Doctor.
Okay.
As I've said, this show is being taken over by Stephen Moffat. To just briefly touch on the things he wrote: Are You My Mummy? The French murder robots, the Doctor and Madame de Pompadour,
and the horse,
the Weeping Angels, and River Song, the Science of the Library two-parter. Those were his stories throughout those seasons, throughout Russell T. Davies' run.
Okay, all bangers.
Yeah, pretty much everyone agreed that was the right call because he consistently was.
Oops, all bangers.
Yeah, he was consistently the best writer of those four seasons. So everyone agreed he should take it over. By the end of his run, some people got a little tired of Moffat's isms, but we'll get to those when we get to them. But knowing that those were his episodes, what sort of things are you expecting from him running the show now?
Can I be honest?
What's that?
I don't fucking know.
Okay. I mean, they are.
I need to emphasize, I am not looking at this as an academic. Mm-hmm. I am here for the vibes. I'm here for a good time. If you had told me that I needed to be taking more rigorous notes and looking at themes and motifs, I've just been looking at color, dude.
Well, I was more thinking
they put David Tennant in blue a lot.
I was more talking about sort of the vibes off of those four stories.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, if you don't know, then you know that's fine.
I don't want to say psychological thriller, but I do think that we'll see more episodes and make you go, huh? But also, this is fucking Doctor Who. There's a lot of episodes that make you go, huh?
Well, we can find out a little bit about that as we watch this first season. So let's get into the professy here.
Hell yeah. So right now, my total, ladies and gentlemen, is that I have 69 points.
Well, that means you're not allowed to get a single professy right for the rest of the series.
Unfortunately not. I can't get a single point correct until I have 420 guesses. And then we have to stop the game altogether.
All right. So with 69 points on the board and... truly,
I can't get that. I can't. We're lucky that my
you just start guessing like the total opposite of whatever the question is.
See, because we're at a point now where it's like 69, great number. One of my actual favorite numbers, though, in all of all time is 75.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, ooh, I gotta get up to 75.
Well, let's see if we can get you a couple points closer today. So I know we've already seen the episode, but it was so long ago. I didn't necessarily feel like
I had to. Do you think I remember anything?
No.
The only thing that I remember from that episode is watching it in the old apartment and going, why is there so much hair? There's not even an animal here.
Since I kind of know that you wouldn't really remember the episode, I don't feel afraid asking you really basic stuff again, especially because I think it's been like 6 years. Maybe 5 or 6 years at this point since I've shown it to you. I'm not surprised if you don't remember this.
No, I flushed it from my memory, Zach.
So
I didn't enjoy it. So it went. I just went, okay, that was 45 minutes. Flush. And now we're back here doing a whole podcast about it.
I've snared you in the trap once again. So this episode features two different alien races. And so the two Professy points are for describing each of these races. The first one is just called Prisoner Zero. And he looks mostly like a kind of sea creature.
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
I don't know. A kind of like a sea creature?
Yeah.
What?
So I'm asking you to name the sea creature he looks like.
No. New question. Kind of like a sea creature. That could be anything. There's so many.
There are so many. I mean, you got it. The last time I asked you a question about them looking like a sea creature, you got it bang on in like one try.
Hell yeah. Horseshoe crabs, baby.
So basically, I'm taking a second crack at that egg and seeing if you can.
Oh, that's never going to happen again.
I was trying to see if you're able to hit the nail on the head a second time.
Do I get, can I, let me ask this, mammal or fish?
They are fish.
Okay. So that does help because that eliminates then all like
dolphins and whales.
Basically.
Yeah.
And otters. Seals.
I will say they're kind of creepier looking ones too, if that changes it, if that impacts your opinion at all.
Okay. Right now, because you said patient zero,
mm-hmm.
sea creature, I'm thinking primordial soup.
Okay.
Thinking horseshoe crab. Not creepier looking, because horseshoe crabs are creepier looking.
You're not wrong.
I don't know that I want
to. I will tell you it's not horseshoe crab again. Just okay. In fairness, I'm not. This isn't like some trick question where I've already asked you it once and the answer's the same. I did that once already. I can't do it again.
Like a lobster.
A lobster?
Yeah, like some kind of crustacean.
Okay. Okay. I will say when I said fish, I wasn't counting crustaceans. If that.
Oh, okay. Then never mind. Like a squid?
Squid?
Yeah.
Okay. A cephalopod?
Are you counting cephalopods as fish?
In fairness, because I already said about the lobster, I will say no, I wasn't.
Okay. So we're talking
about fish.
Fish.
Yes.
Anglerfish.
Anglerfish. Okay.
With or little. No, because you would specifically tell me if it was a Coca-Cola fish.
You mean a coelacanth.
I know. I know it's called a coelacanth, okay?
Yes, but when we first caught one in Animal Crossing, we could not figure out how it was pronounced, so we just called it a Coca-Cola fish. All right, so the first guess for Prisoner Zero is that it looks like an anglerfish.
Yeah, because those are pretty.
Those things are huge.
They're very, like they. That's the thing though, is that they can be anywhere from like football size, like kind of small and compact, like designer sized, mm-hmm. to like
football stadium sized. Well, not exactly. Well, but no. That's exaggeration. But
yeah.
Yeah, but they are huge. All right.
Dead eyes and giant maw.
And then the other alien species in this is called the Atraxi. And the Atraxi, A-T-R-A-X-I, look like a particular part of the human body.
A part of the human body?
Mm-hmm. Not the whole body, just one part of it.
Internal or external?
External.
Okay. I'm going to say foot.
And they look like a foot.
Yeah, why not?
They're like the thumb thumbs from Spy Kids, but they're all feet.
Yeah, or like an ear. Ugh.
Just a walking ear.
Just you said they look like a part of the external human body, so that eliminates all like.
Yeah, they can't look like a heart or a stomach.
And like that would be odd if it looked like a giant pair of titties. I would like that. Likewise, could you imagine
Doctor Who in the Attack of the Bazongas?
Like, could you imagine the BBC okaying an alien that looks like a dick and balls?
I mean, knowing Moffat's run, that wouldn't be out of the question. But all right, we will find out if Prisoner Zero looks like an anglerfish
or vagina,
and if the Atraxi look like a walking ear.
I said foot.
Oh, foot. Sorry. Or if the Atraxi look like a foot as we watch.
Wait, but is it ear? Because you seem to remember ear much better.
That's what I was listening with.
No, Atraxi tracks in the sand. Jesus foot.
There was only one set of footprints. That's because I am 1 foot.
Yeah. One set of footprints, yeah, and 1 foot print. Look over. Oh.
And we will find out if the Atraxi look like feet as we watch the 11th
just
hour.
Just really outing Moffat's fetish right out the gate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Igor's Evil Coffee. Hello there. You look like someone who hisses at the sun or wishes to put a curse upon your neighbors. Well, while I can't help with that, I can bring a little malicious joy to your morning. whether it's maniacally laughing as the lightning strikes behind you, or raising an army of the dead to do your dishes.
What?
Igor's evil coffee is sure to add a little extra flair from the dark magic that overcaffeinates the beans. And that's not all that makes this dark roast special. Igor's evil coffee is the only cup of Joe made with the ashes of a real guy named Joe. Igor's evil coffee, because even bad people deserve good mornings.
And we are back from the 11th hour.
Question.
Okay.
What is with Stephen Moffat and bodies of water?
What do you mean?
Well, we have Amelia Pond, River Song, a duck pond.
Those are the ponds and rivers.
Well, it's just weird that you would have two characters that are named after bodies of water.
Yeah, it is. I mean, maybe he just has like a motif.
Motif. Motif.
What did you think, Cassie?
New intro.
Yeah, we got a new intro.
Very Derbyshire. Yeah. Loved it. Music Concrete, come back.
Yeah. Also composed by Murray Gold, just like the last few arrangements were.
Mm.
I really feel like this episode is really where you could be like, oh, Murray Gold was just let loose. He can do whatever he wants now.
What I liked, though, is that this... What I liked about this intro is that it felt more authentic to its origin.
Okay.
In that there were those blips and bobs and, you know, whoops and stuff that were written in the original text.
Yeah,
Delia Derbyshire went, I got this. this feels like the what she would have done.
Yeah.
If it was not the 60s and she had access to an arrangement of sounds.
Yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite intros that the show has. I will tell you that the intro changes quite a bit. I think Matt Smith has three different intros. The intro for most Doctors will change at least once. I think the only one where I can't think of it changing was...
Because Tennant's changed at the beginning of his run and then didn't change until now.
Yeah.
Because it was that particular intro reminded me of the camp scene in Tarzan, where it's just so much drums.
they only had like slight modifications to his arrangement, but I would still count it just because it is a change. The 13th Doctor is the only one who I don't think her intro changed through her run on the show.
Hmm.
But we have a new intro. We have a new doctor. We now have this madman in a box, as he calls himself.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Matt Smith's first outing as the doctor?
I think you had said it earlier. Flighty.
Yeah, he's very smart, but his brain is just moving at a million miles an hour.
I don't want to say it's unfortunate. But like this episode in particular really does like make it concrete all of my statements about the Doctor having a Peter Pan quality.
Yeah. Like I said, this episode very heavily leans on that, especially with the
I'll come back for you. Just 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's been 12 years.
Yep.
Because that's what happens to Wendy, where she goes back to. You know, goes back to England and Peter says that he'll come back and visit her the next night. And by the time that he returns, she has a daughter of her own.
Yeah, there's something very interesting about like they even say at the beginning that Amelia Pond is sort of like a fairy tale name. Like he was hard leaning into that Peter Pan kind of aspect of it.
Amelia Pond, like a name in a fairy tale.
But I definitely feel like Matt Smith plays the Doctor like he's Fey.
You know, you're not
wrong.
He's
not an alien. I think that this man is really leaning into the Fey aspect.
Yeah, they definitely play up more of the science fantasy, I think.
Of the, like, ooh, cheeky, we're gonna let... Or the, what was it? The Atrexi. Know that you're here by resetting everything to zero. We need to let them know that patient zero is here.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely more.
I'm fucking with the physical world as much as I can.
I think Davies really leaned more on like the sci-fi aspects of it, or like, you know, the things that did it were all, you know, like we saw in his last special, there was a medical device that turned everyone into the master.
Mm-hmm.
But then when Moffat takes over, it really is more like the rules of reality are flexible here. So
there's almost a cartoonish quality.
Yeah. Which reminds you, this is a family show. This is meant for like people of all ages to enjoy. But I think this is the only other real intro to the show that people have talked about that you've seen is Rose. Because David Tennant starts in sort of a weird place. That's not really a place you could just pick up the show. But this is the other place. This is one of like four places people say you can jump on the show. And I think this is the strongest of them, because you just it gives you a lot of like the lore of the show without feeling bogged down by it.
I suppose I do think back. But I was thinking back to when you showed me this episode, mm-hmm. all those years ago, trying to figure out, like, why didn't I, like, leech into it? And I think there are some things where, because the Doctor is moving at such a breakneck speed, it is a little off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though, like, you can identify with Amelia the entire time of just being like, I thought that I made this up.
Yeah.
I thought this was something that I dreamed. But how could it have been when there were so many things I know I saw? Because
mm-hmm.
you even see at the very end, it pans over her collection and her array of different drawings and figurines she had made over 12 years, each one getting a little bit better than the previous.
Yeah, like you could really tell that she was.
It was kind of like when kids have a thing that they draw.
Yeah. Well, like, it's the Doctor was her imaginary friend.
Yeah.
For
like there was an episode
years.
Of the Bob's Burgers that we just watched where Gene had mentioned that he drew a picture of an angry hot dog. And he's like, yeah, this is just what I'm drawing right now. Like every kid has a thing that they draw.
Mm-hmm.
And hers just so happened to be the Doctor.
Yeah. Her raggedy doctor, because for most of this episode,
calling him Raggedy Doctor, though, is so funny.
I'm just a rag doctor.
Happy and freaking out all day, just a rag doctor.
Yeah, he's wandering around in the tattered remains of David Tennant's outfit for most of the episode.
I think they just get more tattered as the episode goes on.
Because he's just running around in them. You know, I do sort of like that they let him find himself before he puts on his outfit. Because David Tennant's Doctor also kind of did that. He was just wearing pajamas for most of
the
Christmas Invasion. He didn't put on the coat until the end of the story.
I do like that they make that he says the phrase of he's still cooking.
Yeah.
Because I've heard that now in so many other contexts that don't involve food. Like whenever I'm getting my hair done, Maddie will say that it needs to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something so silly to me about something that isn't food needing time to cook.
It is kind of funny that both 10 and 11 have fruit in their origins, because when Tennant like wakes up in his in the pajamas and he's yelling at the Santas, he's got an orange in his pocket.
Yeah.
And Matt Smith's first words as the Doctor in this episode are, can I have an apple? Yeah, so he had an apple in his pocket and David Tennant had an orange in his. That's why you could compare them as apples to oranges. Aren't I clever?
I'm really happy that this Doctor didn't need to be roused from his slumber.
Yeah, no, he didn't need tea. He needed fish fingers and custard.
Jeez. After going through the entire pantry, it seems.
The entire food pyramid.
Because it was an apple.
Yeah, an apple was the first one.
Bacon?
He wanted yogurt.
Yogurt.
But then he hated yogurt because it's just stuff with bits in it.
Fair.
I feel like you've also had, like, you know, not autistic moments where you've been like, I don't like this. It's just stuff with bits in it.
I know that's how I've always felt about those, like, I don't know that you would actually know what those are. That's mm-hmm. an Asian treat. But it's like a little Jell-O cup that has like fruit bits in it, or okay. like lychee jelly bits.
Okay.
That's just Jell-O with stuff in it.
Then it's
I never liked them.
Then he says, you're Scottish, fry something. And so she fries up some bacon, to which he went, that's bacon. Are you trying to poison me?
And then it's beans.
It is beans. I think bacon,
beans is my favorite.
Yeah, beans are evil.
Beans are evil. Bad, bad beans.
I think the bacon trying to poison me bit is a callback to, I believe the third doctor implies that aspirin can kill him. And so I think they have a similar beat there. Then he asks for bread and butter. It's very simple, bread and butter. And then he throws the plate out the door and yells, and stay out. That's my favorite. I use that gif on so many things. I used it when Trump got kicked out of office. When he lost the last election, that was my response was, and stay out.
Well, I also need you to remember, I'm a barista. So do you think that if you thought that I was going to plug beans are evil, bad, bad beans. If you thought I would start saying that every day now when I'm at work, you would be correct.
And then Amelia says, well, we've got some carrots. And he's like, what? Why would I want carrots? I'll tell you what I want. And he dips in. It's like, I want fish fingers and custard. And he uses the custard as a dipping sauce for the fish fingers.
Me being the crafty as I am, just would really love to know what exactly he's eating, because it can't be fish fingers and custard. A custard, I believe. The fish finger has to be some kind of fried cake.
Something. Or it's tofu.
Well, because he's not actively eating. He's actively eating the stuff.
Yeah.
So it's either those are fish fingers and mayo, something that has the same texture. But also, I don't think that an Englishman would eat mayonnaise like that. Mm-hmm.
So because I was curious, I looked this up. And according to Matt Smith, anyway, he really ate fish fingers and custard. That was really what he was eating on set for at least the first few takes. Eventually, they swapped out to a cake with a coconut breading. And according to Matt Smith, it was because the fish had gotten cold and crusty and gross. But according to him, at least as far as he's ever said, he started off taking actual fish fingers and actual custard and eating it and surprisingly enjoying it. Anyway, back to the episode. And then after this long, montage of him being disgusted by food, he goes, man, you're really acquiescing to all of me. The crack in your wall must be pretty scary. And they move on to the crack in the wall. I do like that Amelia is introduced regarding the crack in her wall by praying to Santa.
Mm-hmm. Praying to Santa, not unlike Lilo praying for an angel, the nicest angel you have. Cut to the doctor climbing out of the TARDIS, soaking wet.
And then there's, but I also like that she established, she goes, it's Easter, so I hope I'm not waking you.
I like that that means that she thinks that Santa sleeps.
Santa hibernates the other 11 months of the year. And then I do appreciate that she's like, or send a policeman. And then she looks at her window and it's a police box. I the first chunk of that episode is so good.
Well, because the little girl that they have playing Amelia is so cute.
So, fun fact about her, that's Karen Gillan's cousin. And nobody knew that, including them going into production.
Fantastic.
They did not know they were each other's cousins until,
Because I went, damn, they really got somebody who looks like just like her, which can't be too hard. She's a redhead with freckles.
Yeah, no, they found
me thinking that every redhead with freckles looks the same. Whoops.
It's all the soulless eyes, you know?
Stop.
So they cast them separately.
Wild to think that's Nebula.
Right.
Time I see her, I fall in love.
Little Amelia is played by Caitlin Blackwood. They did not know each other at the time, and they did not know that they were cousins until, I believe, through production. They found that out. Just a funny little quinky dink that they were like, yeah, this girl looks just like Karen Gillan.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't I wouldn't look at one of my little cousins and say, yeah, me and Claire look just alike.
Well, you've been slightly influenced by your Japanese father.
Fair. I guess, yeah, if you are Eurocentric and all parts of your family are Eurocentric. Mm-hmm.
The doctor investigates the crack in the wall, says that it's a crack in space and time, two points of space time that should never have touched. And when he opens it, on the other side is a prison with a giant eyeball.
Not a foot.
So we might have discovered Moffat's fetish, but if it is, it's eyes, not feet. All he keeps hearing is "Prisoner Zero has escaped," is a voice that echoes through the crack in the wall.
I hate that. Could you imagine just hearing that at all times?
Or not even at all times, at random times.
Just minding your own business, drawing a picture, then you hear, like, "Prisoner Zero has escaped."
It's like when we had a squirrel in the vent for a little bit, we would just occasionally hear it. It wouldn't be consistent, it would be random.
Or like when we lived at the apartment and every so often you would hear our neighbor's thunderous footsteps. I forgot about another thing I wrote down in my notes.
What's that?
But you said you were in the library. Yeah, the swimming pool's in the library.
So is the swimming pool. He's all pool. Wet. And he spends the whole time all wet, too. He never seems to dry off through all the food. The doctor has so many good little moments here. They really wrote a lot of good actor moments here. Mm-hmm. The one in that scene is,
you know, when grown-ups tell you everything's going to be fine and you think they're probably lying to make you feel better.
Yes.
Everything's going to be fine.
And then he runs out to the TARDIS as it starts to phase away and he's like, it'll be a quick 5-minute hop. And you audibly went, it's not going to be 5 minutes.
No, it was the second she ran back to her house and grabbed her cute little suitcase and just started putting as many things as she could find in the suitcase. Just like a stack of shirts,
yeah,
like a hat.
Yeah, just stacked it all in a little suitcase and then walked
outside.
And then
on her way back out, she managed to grab a coat and a hat so that she's prepared for any weather.
Oh, and then she comes out, sets the suitcase down, and plops and sits on it.
And waits on it. God damn. It was like, did you ever hear about Hachi?
I don't know what that is.
So it was in Japan. It was a Shiba Inu that would follow his, like, person every day to the train tracks, watch the train depart, go back home, and then come back and wait for the train to come back. Mm-hmm. For his person. His person never came back.
Aww.
So Hachi just waited at the train for somebody who wasn't going to be back.
Some real, that episode of Futurama with the dog.
Oh! So that movie, they made a movie out of it that came out right after one of my dogs died.
Oh, no.
We had it on DVD. We put it by the TV. We never watched it.
Yeah, and so So we even get told it's definitely not been 5 minutes by this.
Poor little Amelia was Hachi.
Yeah.
She was just waiting.
We get told that it was definitely not 5 minutes because it does a close up on the clock and it does a crossfade until the clock shows a different time entirely. Like, yeah, several
different
hours.
Time of day.
Yeah. The sun is out and the doctor arrives and starts running into the house and immediately gets thwacked on the head with a cricket bat. And I do like that when he wakes up, he's like, oh, whack on the head. Just what I needed.
Well, because while he's passed out is when we go to the hospital.
Go to the hospital.
Or all the comatose patients. Yeah, they're calling for you. They all woke up at the same time and said, doctor.
Yeah, they do it in front of that doctor.
Good. I'm glad, because the entire time she's making that poor nurse feel like an idiot.
Yeah, we meet Nurse Rory is who we meet in that moment.
Rory.
Yeah, Nurse Rory, played by Arthur Darvill.
Rory is the most English name.
And he's such a meek little lad.
He's just, aw, Rory.
And then as the doctor wakes up, we meet Karen Gillan dressed as a policewoman.
Mm-hmm. Certified policewoman with fish, or with a... but not fishnets, but with stockings.
Yeah, with stockings on. Really should have been the first indication, like, oh, this is not...
Well, I went, wow, they really let their police officers dress up, don't they?
Nope, but it is interesting seeing Karen Gillan. It's also interesting because at this point, I'm so used to seeing her as Nebula. When they do her as Nebula, obviously she has, like, a layer of latex makeup on her whole face.
Like, she has a basically a second skin.
Yeah, and so there's a part of me was like, that's not what her head is shaped like. But I'm like, no, she's just usually bald and covered in latex when I see her in Marvel movies. I've forgotten what her actual head is shaped like. She is the companion for actually a couple of seasons. She runs, I think, two and a half seasons. So she'll be with us for a little bit.
Cool. I didn't want to get my hopes up because I was like, man, I really like her.
Yeah.
She's a little skeptical. I love this.
Yeah, she's skeptical and a little spunky.
Very, very much Rose adjacent, but with the caveat of she doesn't have parents except for an old lady aunt.
Yeah. Who was presumably dead by the time we get to that first, by the time we get to the future, because we don't see hide nor hair of her.
I thought the old lady was her aunt.
Which old lady?
The one that they talked to.
Oh, no, that was her grand. They call her gran.
Oh, and well, I thought it was like the younger guy, like, oh, that's his grandma, but that's her aunt.
I didn't.
Like,
I don't,
weird, like, timey-wimey family dynamics.
I don't think so, because they refer to Jeff as her friend, not as her, like, cousin or something like that. Which we'll get to him.
Presumably if she lives in that house.
Yeah. And she has lived there her whole life, which is why it's so fucked up when the doctor's like, hey, there are six rooms here. Can you imagine for just a minute if you look down the hall one day and just saw a door that hadn't been there before?
I want that to happen so bad. I need more storage in this house.
Just an extra closet.
Oh my God. I'm so eager for whenever, like, we move into a new house. Mm-hmm. For me to discover a room.
And as now that Amy's noticed it for the first time, she starts walking back to that door to open
that
it.
That room also, that door has visible scratches on it.
Well, yeah, because the only thing that goes in it is a giant eel monster.
Big old teeth.
That's how he opens the doors with his teeth. He doesn't have any hands.
He pushes it open with his teeth.
That's why it's covered in scratches. And another great quote that I really enjoy is that as he's telling Amy not to go in the door, he just goes, "Do I have a face that no one listens to?" Again, makes you wonder how many of his faces do not get listened to,
or which one did get listened to? Yeah, which one of his like several faces does he feel like got the most listening to?
I mean, I feel like David Tennant got shadow monsters to listen to him monologue, so.
Yeah, it's because he's pointy. Matt Smith is very, like, weirdly, like, round. He's friend-shaped. He's not a threat.
Amy walks inside and she finds the sonic screwdriver has popped up on the table and gotten covered in goo.
Certainly just goo here.
Delicious eel goo.
Nothing else to see. Does not look like any other bodily fluid.
Certainly not from an eel shaped body part. Yes, the animal I was going for when I asked you about sea creature for Prisoner Zero was eel. But I will take anglerfish if only because it has the same fucking horrifying teeth.
God, I hate those teeth.
And the teeth carry over to every body it has. So I will definitely count Prisoner Zero as an anglerfish.
Thank you. If only
for the horrifying teeth.
Thank you.
So that's 1 point for you today. So Prisoner Zero is confronting them just outside the room. And he's turned into a man and a dog. But for some reason, he's getting the mouths all wrong and the man is barking.
That's a good dog, too.
I kept hoping the dog would start talking.
I did as well. I'm happy the dog didn't start talking.
It might have been
also the most like well-groomed Roddy. He was so sweet. I'm glad. Don't ruin this perfectly good dog.
And I mean, I will say the dog was a surprisingly good actor. It kept us like absolute stone face in a way where it's like,
oh, okay. That's just Rottweilers for you. Yeah. They're awesome.
Or it's just
it
like,
was the way that, like, when the actor would look, the dog would look. And I know that that's the trainer and that's, you know, that's them doing little movie magic to make the dog react. But he did such a good job. Yes, he did.
They start getting cornered by it until you start hearing the Atraxi echo through the sky that the human residence has been surrounded. Prisoner Zero will vacate the human residence or the human residence will be incinerated, is what they keep saying over and over and over again. quickly found to be broadcasting on everything from ice cream trucks to TV channels.
To people's Walkmans, too.
Yeah, she's listening on her phone, and it's the wrong things coming into her headphones. And they burst into the house of what appears to be possibly Amelia's grandmother, possibly just an old. It's a small town. So there's a very real chance that it's like, yeah, we call her Gran because she's everyone's grandmother in this town.
Fair.
Because this town only has like 60 people in it. And we get another one of our bit parts in Doctor Who goes on to great success bits. Jeff, the tall, buff guy.
Yeah.
He is Tom Hooper, who goes on to be one of the main actors in Umbrella Academy. Huh. Yeah. So he's another one who's picked it up. But he's not even the biggest one of this episode. There's a much bigger one coming up that we'll talk about in a second. I really like that the woman is slowly realizing that Amy is a kissogram. She's like, oh, you're a policeman now. I thought you were a nurse.
It was just her being so accepting and so willing to just go with it.
But it's also like, you're an adult. I can't pick on you. But I am a little worried right now that you're a stripper. And I think she almost might have been relieved when she heard not stripper, kissogram. Can you imagine for a second someone hiring a kissogram and fucking 6 foot tall Karen Gillan shows up at your like in your house?
No. Could you imagine having your job be to is that you are hired to go to people's parties, look cute and kiss?
There are some people who that's like living the dream.
Like, could you even be mad if I was like, yeah, sorry, Zach, I went to a party and there was this really like awesome, like Amazonian woman. And she was there to kiss people. I had to
make sure she was working her hours.
I had to make sure that she's doing her job correct. I'm so sorry.
And I do like that the doctor seems more upset than the grandma does. He's like, "What are you were a little girl 5 minutes ago." Like, "Oh, you sound I guess her aunt would be around because she says you sound like my aunt."
Mm-hmm.
Or no, you're worse than my aunt. He's like, I'm the doctor. I'm worse than everybody's aunt.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that's a fun bit. I feel like that's one of the first lines that feels unique to that doctor. There's nothing else really. That's something that I can't really picture Eccleston or Tennant yelling out.
Oh, I could see Tennant yelling that. Tennant being everybody's aunt. Are you kidding me? Like Eccleston, no. Tennant, yes. Tennant has huge auntie energy.
And so they start walking around trying to figure out what to do because they realize that the planet's going to be blown up in 20 minutes. Doctor's got 20 minutes to save the world. 20 minutes of convenient runtime left in the episode.
We only got 20 minutes to save the world.
And so the
no hesitating.
Another fun one is Amy points out that they live in a small town. And so the doctor's like, oh, fuck, I've got 20 minutes to save the world. And all I've got is a post office and it's closed. There's a lot of good quotes in this episode, man. Yes. There's a lot of moments that I'm going to be that way. The doctor realizes that everyone else is staring up at the sun as it's getting blocked out by force fields. Everyone except Rory, who is taking a picture of the man that should not be there. They run over and Rory reveals that Amy seems a little reluctant to say so, but Rory's like, no, I'm Amy's boyfriend. Sort of boyfriend. You know, Rory, if a girl's not going to be, I mean, I understand Karen Gillan, but also like you should be with someone who's like enthusiastic to be with you. You deserve better than that, bud. You're a nurse. You got a lot to offer. I don't care that you're an awkward little shy boy.
And you're in healthcare.
Yeah, you got a steady job.
Yeah, Benny's, baby.
When the doctor realizes that what he needs is a laptop, he turns to Amy and goes, oh, your friend had a laptop. Not him, the good-looking one. And Rory's like, oh, thanks.
Not him, the good-looking one. Thanks.
Jeff.
Oh, thanks.
There's history in that sentence, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctor breaks into Jeff's bedroom.
Room in the old lady's house.
Yeah. Grabs his laptop and goes, oh, get a girlfriend, Jeff. Which implies that he was just about to sit there for a little masturbatory session.
20 minutes.
Yeah, 20 minutes.
Until the world ends.
The sun is getting blotted out.
My man.
And so the doctor joins a video call with all the most important people in the world. NASA, Tokyo Space, international banks, and a British astronomer by the name of Patrick Moore. Ed joins the video call, gives them the secret to faster than light travel, several unsolved theorems, and a joke.
Legitimately, though, if somebody was like, here are two of the biggest answers to your biggest questions, and also a little joke, you know, as a treat.
Yeah, which
I would believe him in a heartbeat.
And all this just to be like, hey, I'm going to send you a computer virus. I really need you all to like send this computer virus everywhere. It's a little bit alive, but it's okay. It's just a little bit alive.
Does the computer virus come back at any point?
I don't think it does.
Okay.
That'd be cool. If it does, it's not popping to mind, but it would be really funny. Amy and Rory run down to the hospital to try and track down Prisoner Zero.
Well, they're supposed to just clear off the comatosis ward.
The doctor says that it's fine. He'll get there in plenty of time because he's commandeered a vehicle, by which he means a fire truck.
She says, how are we going to get in? And he goes, look in a mirror. Oh, right. Cop.
They start wandering through the hall and you meet someone else that has been commandeered.
But can I tell you something?
Sure.
It was her holding the hands of the two little children. And mm-hmm. I went, oh, they're all connected. This is a farce. This is a form.
And speaking of...
Arrest this scary lady.
Speaking of people who get bit parts in Doctor Who and go on to great fame, this might be the biggest one of all. This is Olivia Colman, now Academy Award winning actress Olivia Colman.
Incredible.
Yes.
Wow, how'd they get such a good actor?
Yeah.
She
wasn't famous yet. Now she's gone on to play like Queen Elizabeth in The Crown, and... She won an Academy Award for the movie The Favorite. She's been in Broadchurch, and she's been in Fleabag. She's been in so many things. She was in the Marvel miniseries Secret Invasion. Mm. Like she's got so much going on. But at the time she hadn't done any of that yet. She was still a few years away from that. So she's got a bit part in Doctor Who playing a woman that sounds like a little girl sometimes. And I really enjoyed that moment where, because she's dreaming of being with these two little girls, she's got three mouths and that confuses Prisoner Zero. So she's talking with the wrong mouth, and they chase her down the hall and into the comatose ward, and they only block her out with a broom, like suspend the door with a broom.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. It's an interdimensional multiform from outer space. They're all terrified of wood.
Broom isn't wood.
Broom.
Broom is dirt.
And so the doctor makes his way into the comatose ward by bashing it in with the ladder from the fire truck.
Jeez.
And we start getting why I think Matt Smith was cast for this role, in that he can monologue like a motherfucker. there are some actors that can just absolutely crush a monologue, and Matt Smith is one of them. David Tennant was also one to an extent, but he has this whole thing about how, like, I've saved the world with 2 minutes to spare, I've set all these clocks to zero. He's given out a whole bunch of gobbledygook, but it sounds so like confident and like a winning moment coming from him. And I know that that's going to be a huge feature of his tenure as the Doctor, is a lot of monologues.
Oh no.
So I hope you like men that like hearing the sound of their own voice.
Well, he even says it. He's tired of giving himself an earache, talking to himself so much.
Yeah. He does some sci-fi stuff to pin Prisoner Zero in place. And then Prisoner Zero's like, well, I've got another handy little body I can use to disguise myself. And he makes Amy pass out and starts to use what's in her mind. But in her mind is not her own self. In her mind is the Raggedy Doctor and her when she was a little girl, which is very sweet.
Very sweet. And also like, oh God, poor Amelia.
Yeah.
She's been like haunted by this for 12 years.
Yeah. I like the doctor's like, well, that's rubbish. Who's that? Rory goes, that's you. That's what he's like. That's what I look like. You don't know. Well, it's been a busy day. Because the doctor has not had a spare 2 seconds to look in the mirror.
No, why would he?
Or if he has, it's just been like the rear view mirror of the fire truck. It's not been like a full taking stock of his face and clothes. The doctor has Amy think really hard about when she saw Prisoner Zero's eel form to make Prisoner Zero shift into that body. And I really like the doctor saying, like, congratulations, you've become a perfect imitation of yourself.
Why did that stick with you?
Because that's what I do every day. I'm a pitch perfect imitation of myself. It's just a fun line. It's another one of those things where that line really only works in the context of Doctor Who. And then as Prisoner Zero gets retrieved, the Atraxi start to fly away and the doctor's like, no.
He calls them. He
calls them on Rory's phone, apologizes about how expensive the bill is about to be, and says, Where do you think you're going? Get back here. In a very like this is one of where I say, like, yeah, he's 26, but he does have the energy of someone much older, where it does feel like a parent.
Again, he has auntie energy.
It's like,
can you imagine, like, one of, like, because my mom's an aunt, mm-hmm. or like my Aunt Denise, mm-hmm. just having saved, we'll downsize it, save the day from something that they know shouldn't have happened in the first place. Mm-hmm. Do you know the kind of phone calls they would be making afterwards to make sure that everybody knows that this is never going to happen again?
Yeah, the doctor even says that leaving is good, never coming back is better. And so the doctor basically calls them down to monologue to them on the roof. But first he has to get changed because he realizes his clothes are all tattered. I like that after all we saw with David Tennant's, like, suits, they're just left on the floor of a hospital. Those suits have seen so much. And he just, like, went.
I thought he was taking clothes from, like, he's taking clothes from the hospital. Like, right. Those are patients' clothes. But
what I mean, the clothes he took off were David Tennant's clothes.
Oh, I understand.
And they're just left in the hospital.
I mean, it was a tattered, nasty shirt. Did he keep the shoes?
No, he's wearing different shoes too. These are more like leather.
These are flip flops.
No, these are leather shoes.
Tevas.
The doctor starts changing clothes using other people's clothes from the hospital. And I like, he goes, turn your back if you're embarrassed. And so Rory turns around and he looks to Amy. He's like, aren't you going to turn around? And you know what? Amy's earned this. She's waited 12 years for this. In Azkaban. And she goes, nope. Which, in fairness, Matt Smith's a good looking guy.
She also does a very good job at, like, actively showing that her eyes are eating this up.
Well, it's characterization that we haven't really had for a character. Like, we've had characters that are attracted to the doctor, but it was more like a teenage cutesy, Rose's description of David Tennant was that he had great hair, or Martha was really into the doctor because he was, like, really smart and kissed really well. This is the first time we've had someone who's attracted to the doctor because he's got a really nice ass, at least a companion. We've had some other characters that are, like, casually like attracted to him, that Tennant in that way. And so it's kind of funny. That it's just a way to be like, this is a more mature character.
It also definitely feels like a let me have this.
Yeah.
I have waited for this person for 12 years. I am going to watch him in his most vulnerable state. And I am going to like it.
Because there is a sort of look in her eyes where it almost isn't, like, sexual. It really is more just like
vindictive.
This is one for me.
Yeah. No, she earned it. Three psychologists later.
Four psychiatrists that she bit.
Yeah, because they all told her that she was wrong.
Yeah, that she was. They all unintentionally were gaslighting her.
This is her saying that this is real. Yeah. He's real. He's earned from. He's real.
Yeah, and he's right in front of me. He's real. He's right in front of me and naked, and he's real. And so it is kind of funny to think about how what they originally wanted for the 11th Doctor was, like, a middle-aged actor. If that scene had played out exactly the same, but he looks like 20 years older than she does. I guess it would depend on the actor.
Yeah.
But it would be, it's funny if you picture, like, Peter Capaldi.
Yeah.
Turn around if it embarrasses you. Nope. And so the doctor walks onto the roof, having put on all these other people's clothes, which he will wear for two seasons. He wears other people. He wears that suit of other people's clothes for the next two seasons.
At least he's getting a good use out of them.
Yeah, and he's trying on different ties. He's got his suspenders hanging off. He hasn't put those on yet. As he pulls down the Atraxi, and he does, I think, a really great monologue about the Earth and about, and just, it's very simple in the same way that it feels like the last monologue Stephen Moffat wrote, which is, I'm the doctor and you're in the biggest library in the universe. Look me up. It's that sort of same thing where it's like, is this world protected? And you get like a montage of previous doctor faces.
But you're not the first doctor to have come here. Oh, there have been so many. And what you've got to ask is, what happened to them?
And I really like that he steps through Tennant to reveal his own face.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really fun, like, good beat. And so the Atraxi, the only thing I wish they had done, and I don't know if this was just like a time crunch on the animation, is I kind of wish that when they realize who they're talking to, if the eye, if like the pupil of that eye got just a little bit bigger, just like, or maybe smaller. Smaller might be what it's supposed to be doing. They just go, and then it flies away. That's the only thing I would change about that moment is I wish the pupil dilated in response to the doctor.
The pupil emoted just a little bit.
And so the doctor, there is a little bit of it. Like, it seems to be really twitching in that moment. Like, it's like, I just kind of wish the eye itself, like that the pupil had done something.
Before we move on too far from that, there is something that the patient zero says right before he disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Silence will fall.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
And the Pandorica will open.
The Pandora door?
The Pandorica. The Pandorica will open. Silence will fall are two of the things that he says.
Oh, man, is that like foreshadowing?
It is foreshadowing.
Okay. I clocked it, and then I was like, okay, great, now I just get to sit on this forever. Yeah,
that's those are parts of Moffat's running arcs that he has for his doctors. And so the doctor runs back to the TARDIS after the Atraxi run away. The key in his pocket to the TARDIS gets really hot, letting him know that the TARDIS, it's basically the TARDIS texting him, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done cleaning up the mess you made when you blew up inside me.
Like a cake, the TARDIS is done.
And so the doctor runs to it, and all we get is this little orange glow on his face. I'm like, oh, you sexy thing. And so he does what he calls a little pop to the moon and back. And I do like they have this little moment where it cuts back to Amelia sitting on her suitcase in the morning. Which I don't know if that means she sat on that suitcase for hours, or if she just walks out there periodically and hopes the doctor will show up then. Which is sadder.
I think that it's she sat and waited.
Yeah. Because she's also wearing the same outfit, which would sort of imply that's the case. And she hears it and she smiles, but the doctor doesn't show up. Then the doctor shows up apparently even later, 2 years later, to which Amy is upset about again. And the doctor invites Amy to come along. There's a part of me that would be I would enjoy seeing the doctor with a child companion like Amelia. I'm not going to complain about getting Karen Gillan. She's an incredibly talented actress. And so the doctor shows Amy the inside of his new TARDIS. And I heard you audibly go, ooh.
I just like orange.
What did you think about the new TARDIS?
I like orange. I like all of the found objects in it. Very magpie.
Yeah, the console has like hot and cold sink knobs on
it. Yeah, there was a phonograph, but just like the horn part.
Mm-hmm, there's a typewriter.
Yeah, typewriter. It's just, it is very much a like, what if an antique shop turned into a time machine?
Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium.
Very much so. It feels less sci-fi and more like, okay, cool. The doctor is becoming more human. These are items that he seems to have found and has collected over.
It was all just stuff that was in Amy's shed that when the TARDIS crashed into it, the TARDIS just picked all of it up.
Perhaps.
It's like, this is mine now. I need this for science.
Perhaps, but it's just nice because it's like, he even says that he's put a lot of work into this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, it's a way that you can like physically see that the doctor is not only fascinated by humans, mm-hmm. but also like loves humans. Mm-hmm. Look at all this neat stuff. It's very 22.
Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat?
It's very 22 in Soul, where she's like, your mom like made this jacket with this needle and or repaired this jacket with needle and thread. Like I got this lollipop. Like it is just very like this ethereal being, this person that isn't a person, mm-hmm. just having those like little earthly items that are like, this is what is grounding, like those items is what grounds him. Mm-hmm. And I think serves as like a, not a reminder of like why he does what he does, but just a reminder of like, you know, these are the things that you have found and collected. These are like the your cool items.
Yeah. And also some other little details. I know that you're picking up all little things, but there's also, I don't know, there's a staircase in there now. The underneath the console of the TARDIS is a mm-hmm. glass floor as mm-hmm. opposed to the metal grating. And also, I don't know if you would have picked up on this, if there is a way for you to have picked up on this, when Tennant and Eccleston's TARDIS was, only like 3/4 of a set. Basically, there was an open wall of the TARDIS mm-hmm. that they always filmed through. This TARDIS is a closed set. Mm-hmm. It's so all 4 walls of the TARDIS exist in here, so they could film it at any angle in there they want to. And so that's kind of a fun thing that they play with, is that you get to really feel the inside of the TARDIS. This also, I think, especially compared to Tennant and Eccleston, this TARDIS feels like there are other rooms in there.
Yeah.
Something about just like the way it was like round and you couldn't really see anywhere for you to go somewhere else.
I think it's because you do have now the sense of this is the closed space, but we've seen now most of this closed space. So now the possibilities of there being more space. Mm-hmm. And because we specifically have him at the top of the episode say that he was in the library. And the pool was in the library.
Yeah, and now he doesn't know where the swimming pool is anymore.
Or the library.
It might be in the wardrobe. The TARDIS also gives him a new sonic screwdriver, because the one for Tennant got all fritzy and blew up. And when he tried, there's a part in it where the Doctor tries to like alert the Atraxi to come find Prisoner Zero, but in doing so, he blows up the sonic screwdriver.
But so, yeah, now this one's green.
This one's green, and it's got like bronze and silver accents. I love that design. That is still my favorite sonic screwdriver. I like that it's got, I don't know if you've seen all the features on it yet, but it's got this little like extended claw.
Of course I didn't, dude. We've seen it for maybe 15 seconds.
Okay. This is my favorite. I had one for a long time until it broke, and I've ordered another one because we started watching this and we want one again. It hasn't arrived yet. And so I like that when he picks it up, though, he goes, thanks, darling. And he basically has to convince Amy to come along. But Amy kind of already wants to go.
Well, she's always wanted to go. She packed a bag the night they met because she was already ready to go.
Yeah. It is funny that she was so prepared when she was a little girl. And now she could not be less prepared by the fact that she's in her nightie. She's dressed for sleep. Not in her hat and coat with her full suitcase. She walks in her bedroom attire.
Now there's clothes somewhere.
Well, there are clothes in her room.
There are clothes in her room.
Because Amy.
Hey, speaking of which, do you know what my favorite clothes in her room was? A wedding dress.
Yeah. Amy says that she needs to get back for tomorrow morning because she's getting married in the morning.
Okay. Bet.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect we've never had for a companion before. We never had a companion that is running from something, especially something so human. Mm-hmm. Like we've had companions that have like been attacked by aliens all the time. We've never had one that's like, I'm going to leave with you because I'm scared about getting married in the morning.
Well, because the only other companion that was getting married was Donna.
Donna, yeah. But what I mean is like we've had like Martha who's getting chased by rhinos and Rose who was getting chased by plastic people. None of them have ever been chased by their own fears is what I was getting at. And so that's an interesting aspect of it that we'll get to as we get into this season. Do you have any other thoughts so far that you're that you're thinking about?
Beans are evil. Bad, bad beans.
Beans are evil. Bad, bad beans. We'll find out if beans continue being evil on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?